Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
College football, pro football, I sure hope it's back with or without fans. And yes, it would be different, and yes, it might be strange. But you know what's even stranger than no fans in the stands? No football at all from September through January. Nah, that does not appeal to me. Negative, Ghost Rider. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. You can find us on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page named After the Show. And of course, per the usual, regardless of where I am, we are inside the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. These are challenging times, and Rocket Mortgage is prepared to help. If you need mortgage assistance, contact the team 24/7 at rocketmortgage.com. From their home to yours, the team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. We start off this hour with Bryant McFadden, former Steeler, Super Bowl champ, now football analyst on CBS Sports HQ. Overall, the NFL is still chugging right along, Bryant. If you look back over the last couple of months, how do you feel about the way the league has handled all this uncertainty in the spring of 2020?
They've handled this situation in a marvelous way. And the reason why I say that, just looking at the transition when it came to having the draft, right? I think the draft was entertaining. It was a pleasure to watch. And we all needed something like that related to sports for us to be able to stay sane and also be optimistic that we will see a season. So I think I look at being able to, you know, call multiple audibles when it came to having the draft that was supposed to happen in Vegas, having the entire draft go virtual. It was phenomenal. I really enjoyed watching that draft more so than any other draft because the unknown that led up to the actual draft day, draft night, the entire weekend was phenomenal. So they get an A+ from me when it came to handling the draft and then everything outside the draft via free agency. Granted, players weren't able to really go see teams personally, and that kind of hampered some big-name players. But just to follow up with what happened via free agency leading up to the draft, you get the Tom Brady news. That was headlines for about a week or so. Tom Brady, Phillip Rivers, you know, big-name players at important positions were moving from team to team. Chicago traded for Nick Foles. Jameis eventually signing with the Saints. Drew Brees re-signing with the Saints. So we had headline after headline that was involved with the NFL. And the thing is with the NFL, they didn't have to steal the limelight from any other professional sports because everything was stagnant. Nobody was doing anything. But they provided us, media-wise, with headline after headline. And then after the draft, you know, just seeing how the teams were involving the current crop of players with the virtual workouts, the virtual meetings. I mean, all in all, I think the NFL did a wonderful job in being able to adjust with these unfamiliar times to be able to provide us with content to talk about.
Yeah, no, it's been great. It's almost like the NFL never missed a beat, as you say. They were able to adjust really well. And now we have some facilities opening up where employees are able to get back to work. And we know that athletes will soon be able to use the facilities on a limited basis for individual workouts. But as we look at this period, normally in July, where the NFL and its teams kind of shut down and take a brief vacation before training camp start. Do you think that knowing from your career and knowing the challenges of this spring that they should change what they've got ahead of them now in the off season before we get to training camps?
No, I wouldn't say change. I think they need to continue to follow the schedule that has been set forth for the ball clubs. And okay. I think not knowing exactly if the season will be hindered, will they start on time, with the not knowing should provide an element for you to continue to do everything you've been doing to be ready. Because one thing about the NFL, right now we believe the season will start off on time.
Right.
Right. That's basically what we're expecting. And if that's the case, if you're a player, your job is to be in tip-top shape whenever it is time for you to go to camp. They're not going to allow you to have the excuse, well, I didn't know. You know, I really didn't know if we were going to start off on time. I didn't know if it was going to be pushed back. So whatever it is that you need to do to be in the best shape possible, do it when it comes to the players. And the same can be said for the coaches. I mean, you know, going through the playbook, not having the OTAs like you mentioned, not knowing exactly how training camp will be handled. Your job as a coach, whenever it's time to go, you have things lined up for your players to be successful best as possible based on your studying and knowing who you're working with the personnel standpoint.
Brian McFadden is a former Pittsburgh Steelers cornerback, a Super Bowl champ with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. You can catch him on CBS Sports HQ talking NFL. So, Brian, I like what you say about nobody's got any excuses, because we all knew that this was the situation that that we would be in. So then how, if you are going through this virtual offseason, how would you approach it? What are your priorities to be ready?
Just whatever you can do to stay in the best shape possible, study as much tape possible. The thing I know about the NFL, when it comes to teams, they would do everything in their power to make sure their players are having an opportunity to get better. So as a player, I got to work out. I got to continue to do my regimen. Granted, I might not be able to work out with a professional trainer, but if you've been around football for quite some time, you know what it takes for you to be in good condition, right? You know what it takes for you to be in tip-top shape. And then when it comes to the mental standpoint, being able to request different game films from your organization, being able to study, being able to get the playbook if you have a new DC, if you have a new OC, being able to get those adjustments virtually, so therefore you feel comfortable whenever that time comes to get back on the grass.
What challenges do you face when you're learning the playbook without the benefit of going through it with your teammates?
Seeing it on paper, but not being able to execute it on the football field with the other teammates. I think the players that really are put in a very, very difficult position are rookies. You know what I mean? Like quarterbacks, wide receivers, running backs, skill position players on the defensive side. Because you're virtually looking at the playbook, but you're not able to hear it. You're not able to go out and act it out on the football field with the other teammates. And I think coaches will keep that in mind, you know, when everybody gets together, because the offseason regimen is very, very important for younger guys, OTAs, mini camps, training camps, because these are reps that they get an opportunity to get familiar with their new team, their new coaches. And right now, these rookie players are kind of behind the eight ball. You know, guys like Justin Herbert plays the quarterback position. Tua Tagovailoa plays the quarterback position. All these guys are really behind the eight ball, because only thing they can do is see it on paper and maybe watch it on film, but you don't get a chance to really go out on the grass and orchestrate the offense with the rest of the guys because of the coronavirus being able to hamper those offseason regimens when it comes to OTAs and things like that.
It's been interesting to think about the teams where they've changed coaches, and even if they are veteran coaches like a Ron Rivera, Mike McCarthy, they're taking over in new places. When you think about Mike Tomlin and his tenure, one of the longest tenured head coaches in the NFL, how much of an advantage does he have as a guy who is not only established and has a system that's established, but also has a bunch of veterans in his locker room that know what to expect with him?
Yeah, that's a plus. I mean, when you walk into a situation where the locker room is well established, the structure is in place, it makes the flow of things go by easier. They're not trying to figure out who they are. They're not trying to figure out the identity. The structure is already in place. They're a relevant ball club. So those teams are teams that I expect to be okay whenever it's time for them to get back to work. Some other teams that are in a rebuild type mode, you know, a rebuild situation that they're trying to figure themselves out along with a new cast of players, either experienced players or young players, it's going to take some time for them to really find who they are, especially not having the normal off-season regimen that they have been accustomed to having.
I got to tell you, Bryant, there isn't a coach in the NFL that I would rather listen to in a press conference than Mike Tomlin. He's he's just so interesting, and he's got obviously an extensive vocabulary. Does the man ever smile? I mean, do you get a loose kind of Mike Tomlin who lets his hair down sometimes?
Oh, no question. Mike Tomlin, now granted, he don't have his media personality is 10 times better than Bill Belichick, so he gives you a smile sometimes when he's doing interviews. So you can't put him in that category.
No, yet. I love him.
Yeah, but he's a personable guy. He's a player's coach. He's a media coach. I think the media loves to talk to Mike Tomlin. Now, granted,
yes,
there's no coach you want to talk to after a tough loss, you know, especially when you talk about the passion that's involved in the game. And that can go throughout the NFL. But when you're talking about just trying to pick his brain and just have football talk with him, Mike Tomlin is one of the best in the business.
What makes him a great coach? Behind the scenes, but you know, in the locker room or in practices, what makes him a good coach?
He's instinctive. He knows the game. He doesn't just know the game from one side. He knows the game from both sides, including special teams. So the respect he commands when he's talking is always at an all-time high because we know he knows exactly what he's talking about. And he might not be in every meeting room, but he knows exactly what every position player is supposed to do and why they're doing what they're doing. And that tells you he does his homework, you know what I mean? And some coaches might not be – that might not be their strong suit. You know, you got some position coaches who are defensive-minded guys or offensive-minded guys. They might not be really invested in the opposite side of the football field because that's not what they do. Mike Tomlin has been known to be a defensive guy, but he's well informed about the offensive side as well.
Bryant McFadden is a Super Bowl champion, was with the Steelers for his career as a defensive back. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio, and you can catch him on CBS Sports HQ. Just wanted to ask you one more question about the Steelers, and then we'll hit some other stuff. But what sticks with you about the defense last year, which really was instrumental in keeping Pittsburgh relevant?
Just the playmakers they had on the defensive side. All three levels had playmakers. And they all made plays. And then the addition of Micah Fitzpatrick just made a good defense great. I think what he provided was huge playmaking ability combined with everything else they already had in place. And then they can rush the passer. See, the thing about Pittsburgh that I love, they can rush the passer, they can stop the run, and they can stop the pass. All three levels was gelling. And I think the expectations are extremely high for that unit getting ready for this season.
Tell the truth, though. What was your reaction when Tomlin traded for Fitzpatrick right after Ben Roethlisberger gets injured and is out for the season?
I was confused, just like the majority of the spectators out there, because you gave away a first-rounder. But at the time, you know, everybody gave their opinion about that draft.
Sure.
We just needed to allow it. We just needed to see it play out. And they actually played out wonderful. You're telling me you give up a first rounder for the type of guy that Micah Fitzpatrick is? Okay, so be. I think we got caught up in the film that we saw from him in Miami where he wasn't utilized the right way. And because of that, you know, you kind of forgot about the playmaker he was at Alabama. But when he went to Pittsburgh, their coaches there were able to put him in good positions, and we saw the same plays, the big playmaking ability that he displayed at Alabama in a Steeler uniform.
It was interesting to hear another great defensive player, Aaron Donald, say last week that he can't imagine playing without fans. And you went to Florida State and then, of course, played in a great home field atmosphere. Can you imagine being on a football field or being at Heinz without any fans in the stands?
No, I couldn't imagine that. But if that's the case, if that's the cards you've been dealt, then so be it. And the thing is about that situation, it's going to be hard, but it's going to be fair. The reason why it's going to be hard because no one is accustomed to playing a meaningful game without fans. The fair part is that the entire league will have to go through the same process. So I think it's an adjustment, but if that needs to take place for us to have football, I think the players will make that adjustment. And by third or fourth ball game, they are used to it, and they're still putting out quality product for us to view.
So I got to ask you this. When the home team, so let's say you're the visiting team. The home team is on offense, and you often see the quarterbacks quiet down the crowd, and it's pretty incredible how 80,000 people can quiet down to a hush. But then, of course, we can hear a lot of times what's being said along the line. We, as fans, may not be able to hear everything, certainly don't know the nuances, but as a defensive player, if you can hear what the offense is saying and what the quarterback is telling his line and his receivers, does that give you an advantage? Let's say it's quiet, and you can hear what they're saying. Does that help you?
It depends on if they continue to use the same vocabulary for all four quarters, which I highly doubt, because then you can kind of pick up on the verbiage. But I really believe if there's no fans in the stadium, I think when it comes to the home team, they will be able to pump in the home noise, I think. I think that should be an advantage of playing at home.
You think?
You know, automatically having, you know, crowd noise be involved without actually having fans. Similar to what we do during practice, they have speakers on the field, and if we're going into hostile territory, the week of practice, we're usually practicing with crowd noise for our offense, mostly.
Do you think that would be weird, or would it be, is it odd when you hear it in practice?
No, you get used to it. I mean, we've been doing that since college. My time at Florida State, we're going to play Clemson, if we're going to play Miami, anytime my offense is on the football field going against the scout team D, the crowd noise is pumping because we know it's going to be loud. So they try to get your ears prepared for the atmosphere on game day. And also, too, being able to go through your checks when it's extremely loud. So I think that would be clearly a big-time option to have in place if there are no fans involved. For NFL teams, a home team, whenever their defense is on the football field, you should be able to pipe in some crowd noise.
Mm. What are a couple of places in the NFL that you found particularly difficult to play in as a visitor?
The usual suspects would be Baltimore, Cleveland probably for a quarter, Seattle, back when Indy had the old RCA dome.
Oh, the dome, yep.
It used to get loud there. Places like Green Bay, the Patriots. Buffalo gets loud.
Yep.
Giant. The best way to answer that question without skipping a team, any team that has a large following where the market is established, mm-hmm. or that team has just been consistently good, those are the teams that have loud crowd noise.
We're talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers in the defense, and now there's going to be a challenge for however long Lamar Jackson is healthy and is on the field. As someone who, you know, faced a lot of different quarterbacks, Brian, what's the first thing you need to do to contain a guy as talented and versatile as Lamar?
You just said it, contain him. Try to keep him in the pocket, make him make professional throws for four quarters. The thing that makes Lamar so unique is that he's like a running back playing quarterback, but he can throw the ball. But when you're so athletic, sometimes you want to showcase that athleticism. And when he does, now you give him a two-way go. And you give any elite player a two-way go with two-way options, they're going to pick the best option. And I think that is the best thing to have in place when you're playing against Lamar Jackson. Try to contain him. Keep him in the pocket.
I know you do work on CBS Sports HQ, so I'm sure you've spoken about this in the last couple of weeks, but the NFL did expand its requirements for interviews when it comes to minority coaches and coordinators, and they tabled the idea of draft incentives as part of the Rooney Rule. There are a lot of people who've come out in opposition to that, but as someone who played for a minority coach, kind of understanding the lay of the NFL, what did you think of the draft incentive piece of it?
I mean, I have mixed feelings about that. It's good that that's what they're considering to do, but it's bad that you have to do that.
Right.
That's the thing. That is what you need to have in place for individuals to get more interviews, more minorities to get more interviews. And doesn't mean that will still grant warrant opportunities for minorities to be in front office, for minorities to be, you know, the head man in charge of a ball club. So I don't think, me personally, that that's going to change anything. Actually, because you're now having individuals potentially get the job based on the benefit that follows them instead of getting the job because they're qualified. And I don't think that's fair. It's almost like if, you know, you work at, you know, the post office and you're looking for new postal workers. And, you know, this one guy, if I sign him to be a part of my team, I get extra bonuses for the company. I'm only basically signing you because of the bonuses that you're attached to. Mm. If those bonuses were not attached to you, I probably wouldn't give you the time of day. And there lies the unfairness for whoever that individual is that will get an opportunity, because you have to do this just for more minorities to get opportunities. That tells you how bad the situation was, in my opinion.
So then, Bryant, do you believe that moving forward, let's say they add the draft provisions, I don't know that they will, but moving forward, then every time a minority got hired as a coach or coordinator or general manager, that automatically there would be this stigmatism attached to it, that it was about the draft incentives?
Probably. It depends on who you're talking to. Some people might not feel like that was the reason why they got the opportunity, and some people might feel that way. I mean, if I was to ask you that question, you saw the New York Jets, using them as an example, go out and hire a minority to be their new GM based on the new restrictions that they have in place. What would you think?
Yeah, I mean, it would depend, you're right, on the person, but also you look at their history, too, and wonder why all of a sudden the change, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. All right. You can find Bryant on Twitter at @BMAC_sports talk. And he's now on CBS Sports HQ, but former two-time Super Bowl champ and Steelers defensive back. Bryant, it's great to talk to you. Thank you so much for a couple of minutes.
Thank you for having me.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Good morning to you. If you're waking up on your Tuesday and get started on your work week after the longer holiday weekend, we started our work week on Sunday night, and so this is our second show. But if you're just joining us, we'll take you however we can get you. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. I happened to see Mike Tomlin as a guest with Coach Calipari on Coffee with Cal, which is the podcast that the Kentucky men's basketball coach does. And he has all kinds of really cool guests. And listening to Bryant McFadden from CBS Sports HQ reminded me that Coach Tomlin and Coach Cal had talked about the Rooney Rule themselves.
You know, we got to acknowledge first, just in a blanket statement, man, that we have a problem with minority hiring specifically in football. But I guess that it's an issue with minority hiring across a lot of industries and lines. I'm on with the NBA coaches tomorrow, actually, talking about things that are going on in our game with the Rooney Rule. So, but specifically with the Rooney Rule, man, we're making some adjustments because we're acknowledging right now that the system is broken, that minorities are not getting enough opportunity. And we're trying to just figure out how to stimulate that. And I think there's been a lot of discussion in recent days, particularly about incentivizing the minority hiring process and people's position regarding that. I agree it's debatable about what, you know, the value placed on an incentivized plan, but I just generally like the discussion. You know, we've always taken it from the approach of punitive if you don't interview minority candidates or things of that nature. I just like the different approach in terms of spinning it 180 and talking about maybe incentivizing those that develop the talent and those that hire the talent.
Mike Tomlin revealing that he is spending time talking with NBA coaches, joining them for a call and trying to help them stimulate the hiring of minority coaches, but mentioning that he's going to share what's happening in the NFL. And I like the approach that Coach Tomlin uses there. Instead of this being a negative thing, punishing teams, disciplining teams, or penalizing teams, discipline's the wrong word, penalizing teams who don't give proper opportunities or equal opportunities to minority candidates, let's add some incentives. And so it's a different spin on it. It's a different twist, a different way to look at it. And so that's his opinion. And of course, the debate rages about the right way to do it. But he uses the word stimulate. If you can stimulate more opportunities, generate more opportunities, somehow make this a positive, attach positives to hiring minorities. And as Brian McFadden just said to us, it's bad news that you have to do it. But it's not a problem that's unique to professional sports. Let's be honest. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Funny, it came in like a lion and went out like a lamb, and it's getting a stamp of failure associated with it from one high-ranking NFL official. I'll explain what I mean coming up, and our Twizzler Tuesday question out there as well for you, so we'll re-rack that.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Third down and 10. Breeze from the gun. Takes a snap. Goes to the near side. Hit early. Where's the flag?
You don't get one.
Early hit on Tommy Lee. Sean Payton is all the way down at the 10. Unbelievable no call.
Wow, not a flag to be found.
Unbelievable.
He is early. That's the second time. You can't challenge it. I mean, he doesn't even look for the ball.
Mikel Roby Coleman.
That's the second time Mikel Roby Coleman has gotten away with a play like that.
He is 4 yards before the ball is there.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
An infamous moment from the 2018 NFC Championship game, and the NFL was so, so distressed that that one moment seemed to overshadow what they considered to be an extremely successful season in 2018, that the league went overboard and the owners amended the pass interference rules to include challenges from coaches, both calls and non-calls. Well, as it turned out, it was a big disaster. Changing the rule, I mean. Yes, that call, missed call of P.I. in the championship game was also an unmitigated disaster, as you hear on the Saints radio network. But even after the rule change that allowed for these judgment calls to be reviewed, the NFL ultimately overturned only 13 of the 81 PI calls that were challenged by coaches, and it was so inconsistent. And so for more often than not, what happened was they ended up going with the call that was made on site, which is how it should be when it comes to judgment calls, in my opinion. It came in like a lion, that rule change, and it went out like a lamb. We found out that the NFL owners just quietly declined to renew that rule and keep it past the 1 year evaluation. Well, Troy Vincent is not letting it go out quietly. The NFL executive VP of football operations says we failed miserably. That's the phrase that he used, failed miserably when it came to the PI replay review. And he thinks it should serve as a cautionary tale for the NFL to overreact. And certainly the league did overreact to the outcry, to the uproar, to the criticism. And they went ahead and changed a rule that really didn't need to be changed. And so he says we cannot fail this year. He says the outcomes of this this rule change were not good for professional football, played out publicly. And so he says we failed. I share that failure, and we need to be careful not to rush in rule changes or implement other changes like this, you know, in a reaction, an emotional reaction. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Troy Vincent speaking to Peter King of NBC Sports, and that failed miserably comment caught my eye. Time to go back for the player of the week that's brought to you by Grainger. Let's take a look at the one who got it done. And it takes us to 1935. This date in history, 1935, track and field athlete Jesse Owens. Talk about an iconic name. He equals or breaks 4 world records in 45 minutes at a Big Ten meet at Ferry Field in Ann Arbor, Michigan. It's remembered as the greatest 45 minutes ever in sports. Jesse Owens went on, of course, to become an Olympic athlete as well, one that continued that incredible success. And I really wish I could have seen him run in person. That's one of those periods and one of those athletes that I would have loved to cheer for in person and to watch him do what he did without having to think about the video footage, the black and white, the pictures. I guess there was a video footage with the black and white, the picture. There was some. 1935, that's a long time ago. Anyway, it would have been nice to have witnessed it and to cheer him on. The Player of the Week sponsored by Grainger. For all the ones who get it done, there's Grainger offering supplies and solutions for every industry, plus over 24/7 customer support and product specialists always ready to answer any question. Call or visit Grainger.com. 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line, 855-212-4CBS. And we've been talking a little bit about this idea of pro sports leagues allowing fans where fans are allowed, right? So allowing fans, whether limited capacity, let's say 25%, 50% in places where they're allowed. We know now sports are starting without fans, but at some point there may come the opportunity for some fans to get back into the stands. And when you think about college football and you think about Ohio State potentially having a plan in place to allow 50% capacity at the Horseshoe and other NFL stadiums that may be in places where fans are allowed, some states that are farther along in terms of the phases. Now, football is still several months away, and so who knows what changes then. But we were talking to college football insider Barrett Salee of CBS Sports earlier in the show, and I asked him about this inequity, maybe fans in some places, but not having fans in other places.
Well, Gene Smith, the Ohio State Athletic Director, mentioned his plan that they're going to have 20 and can ramp up from there, that they have a sort of a model for that. You know, I think the thing with college football and the NFL, for that matter, is there's going to be a blueprint, right? Like NASCAR's coming back, already back. They didn't have fans. My favorite sport of Supercross comes back May 31st. They're racing seven races in Rice-Eccles Stadium in Salt Lake City over a 3.5-week period. You're going to have baseball come back as long as the players get over themselves. Well, that's a whole different conversation. NBA and NHL will see. So you're going to have a lot of information if you're college football or the NFL, you know, on how to do this or how not to do this. And so, you know, I think for cautionary's sake, there's going to be limited or no fans early. And obviously that's the case with the sports that are already started or about to get started. But I just don't see why you can't have full stadiums, because, you know, if you're going to sit there and say that, again, that in a college football team, the players can be around each other 24/7, 365, but fans can't, then you're valuing the fans' lives and well-being over the players. But I think it also is, this is my personal opinion, I just don't see why we can't let adults be adults. You already have disclaimers on the back of tickets, or in, I guess this day and age, the small print on an iPhone ticket, where it says, "Hey, you know, we're not liable if you know some A, B, or C happens at your stadium when you buy a ticket." You know, responsible people are responsible people. You know, sick people or people with underlying conditions, it's not like they were going out and partying and doing whatever they want before. I mean, at some point you have to say, "Right, look, things got to get back to normal," and you know, people who need to look out for themselves should be, you know, should be charged with looking out for themselves and leave it at that. So all of those things combined makes me think that for football, college and the NFL, you're more likely to have full stands. And if it does start out with limited capacity, that will change as the season goes on.
Barrett Salee from CBS Sports HQ. We talked about the unique challenges facing college football. And certainly it's different than the NFL because of the campuses and what campuses might still reopen remotely in the fall. Some have already indicated they will reopen their campuses for classes in person. Others are not at that point yet. What happens if you have a conference where some campuses are open, some campuses are not. It poses all kinds of obstacles and hurdles for the scheduling. And then this idea of fans, which is kind of where we got to this concept of allowing adults to make their own choices. Now, I'm not at all referring to fans going to events in places where state and local regulations are still limiting mass gatherings. But if some of these stadiums are located in places where 50% capacity is allowed, and there are all these different rules that fans are willing to jump through, whether it's wearing a mask, whether it's sitting, you know, in a section that isn't completely full, whatever that happens to look like, the risk is there for the pro sports leagues and the colleges and universities, because if there is an outbreak or a flare up and it results in the sports world shutting down a second time, well, then you're stuck. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to come from the world of sports, right? So, you know, I'm kind of making some leaps here. But if there are fans allowed in the stands, and because of that, there is a flare up in the virus, so there could or could not be a connection there. But if there happens to be a flare up with the virus and sports has something to do with it because they've got a bunch of fans in their stands, well, then we risk seeing sports go into hibernation again. And so the risk versus the reward, it's a very real and difficult dilemma right now that is facing these leagues. In places where fans are allowed in limited capacity or 50% capacity, whatever the number is, should they allow the fans to return to their games or not? Because there is a greater risk if you have people in large groups. Whether they're keeping their distance and wearing masks, there is always a risk that if someone else has the virus, you could end up catching it. There could be community spread. It doesn't have to happen. I go to the grocery store a lot, and I wear my mask, and I wash my hands, and I'm careful what I touch, and don't touch my face, and I haven't gotten the virus. It doesn't mean automatically if fans get together in stands that there will be an outbreak. But there is a greater risk. And then, of course, there is a greater risk that sports could get shut down again. So interesting conversation. We're asking you about this idea of allowing adults to make that choice. Or should the sports leagues make it for them and say carte blanche, no fans, because it's a greater risk? Barrett is saying allow adults to make these choices for themselves. If we want to go to the stadiums, to the ballparks, we should be allowed to go. If we don't want to go and we prefer to stay home because we want to mitigate that risk for ourselves and our families, well, then we can stay home. But it should be up to us as fans, not the sports leagues, is kind of the idea. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. In Tampa, they are celebrating the reopening of Tropicana Field, and there were 14 players and manager Kevin Cash there on Monday for workouts. And, of course, they were following rules, and they had medical checks, but there were a lot of smiles, too, as Cash welcomed back part of his team.
They were allowed to play catch, condition run, and then kind of we set up like a makeshift gym. Right when you walked in, there was Joe Binge would ask about 6 or 7 questions and then take a temperature check. We were all in masks with the exception of players while they were active.
And so they have weight facilities out on the field. They're able to play catch. They're able to do workouts, kind of keeping their distance. But again, to be able to get these guys on the field and being able to see each other is pretty amazing. And Austin Meadows, he was smiling. He was one of those guys.
I think today was the first step in the right. I think it was a step in the right direction. Everybody obviously going in wearing masks. They had a station to wash their hands with the masks and stuff like that. Seeing some of the guys and, you know, Cash and all that with the mask. I think that's something, you know, to get used to. But I think the more and more we get out there together, and I think that'll really start to get a feel of what it's going to be like.
It's a step. And we also saw with the Dodgers, they've reopened their facilities for medical and rehab purposes only, not for workouts. But we're starting to see, I refer to it as the iceberg melting a little bit in various parts of the country. Florida and Arizona are kind of ahead. Brooklyn Nets are reopening their facilities, another one of the NBA teams that will allow individual workouts, because right now that's the only thing that the NBA is allowing. And so it's starting to happen in various places around the country. And the NBA, Major League Baseball, the NHL, they are inching closer to a concrete plan for getting their sport restarted. The NFL, college football have the benefit of waiting and watching and seeing what happens over the next couple of months. Hope that you enjoyed your long weekend. Thanks for joining us on this Tuesday morning. Now check out our podcast if you want to listen back to portion of the show after hours, amylawrence.com. We'll talk to you again tonight for our hump show here on CBS Sports Radio. Boom!
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.